And this is KPCW. It's 8:06 on this Pioneer Day, July 24th. Happy Pioneer Day to all of you. There will be some road closures associated with the parade, which kicks off at about an hour. Those will mostly be in Salt Lake City. However, looking at Wasatch back traffic right now, Utah Department of Transportation is not reporting any crashes at the moment, and I don't see major backups, although that usual eastbound 80 to 40 interchange backup is growing as we speak. If you do see anything, the number to call is 435-655-8255. It's going to get up into the 90s today, but right now it's pretty cool. Here with more about weather in the Wasatch back, we've got ABC4 meteorologist Nate Larson on the line. Good morning, Nate.
Hey, good morning. Good morning, Park City and Heber. Happy Pioneer Day. Temperatures today, yeah, they remain very hot. In fact, I just checked the record high today for at least the station at the Park City Library. The record's 92 from 2003. I show 91 for the high today in Park City. Yeah, but near record highs today for the Wasatch back. Park City looking at 91, Heber 98. The record for Park City is 92. We're going to continue to see hazy sunshine for much of the day today with increasing cloud cover as we get into Thursday. So we've got a front moving in. It should bring clouds overnight, maybe a stray shower. Better chance on Thursday afternoon and evening of showers and thunderstorms. Temperatures are going to cool to 84 tomorrow, 83 on Friday with some lingering moisture. We'll have more shower and thunderstorm activity clearing out into the weekend. Temperatures hang on to the mid-80s. We could have a few lingering showers on Saturday with clearing skies Sunday, 83 for the high, and we'll hang out more in those mid-80s early next week with plenty of sunshine. So some much-needed rain hopefully on the way. It's looking more promising with these fronts that are moving in, again, primarily late Thursday into Friday. And for Heber, smoky skies, 98 today, 91 tomorrow. Thunderstorms are expected, especially Thursday evening into Friday, with temperatures falling to 89 on Friday. We'll hang out in the low 90s over the weekend with some clouds Saturday, maybe a few storms. Otherwise, 91 Sunday with sunshine and low 90s next week with high pressure building back in, helping drive up those temperatures towards midweek.
ABC meteorologist Nate Larson, thanks so much.
Thank you.
You're listening to the Local News Hour. I'm Connor Thomas filling in for Leslie this morning. And coming up, it's all Olympic interviews, as we've been speaking about all morning. The 2034 Winter Olympics were officially awarded to Salt Lake City and Utah by the International Olympic Committee earlier in Paris. Mayor Nan Worrell is going to call in live from Paris after that announcement. Then we'll speak with Colin Hilton. He's the president and CEO of the Utah Olympic Legacy Foundation, which runs Utah Olympic Park, Soldier Hollow, among other venues from the O2 Games. And then we'll speak with Tom Kelly. He's the spokesperson for the Salt Lake City Utah Bid Committee and has been key in bringing the games back to our state. Then at 9 a.m., it's the Mountain Life. Guests include today best-selling author of The Emerald Mile, Kevin Ferdarko, who's going to talk about what he calls his misadventure. That was a 750-mile hike through the Grand Canyon. Then author and journalist Michael Castleman discusses his book, The Untold Story of Books, A Writer's History of Book Publishing from Gutenberg to Amazon. Castleman knows his books. That's all coming up on The Mountain Life, and this is the Local News Hour from KPCW. Well, with Utah hosting the Olympics again in 2034, KPCW's Parker Malatesta reports many aspects of the state will be different when compared to when Salt Lake City hosted the Winter Games in 2002.
According to data from the University of Utah's Kemp-Gardner Policy Institute, Utah's population in 2034 will be around 4.1 million, which is nearly double compared to 2002 figures. That means nearly half the state's residents will not have experienced the Winter Olympics last held in Salt Lake City in 2002. Gardner Institute Director Natalie Gutschner says the growth creates an opportunity for the state to, quote, cement the Olympic legacy for generations to come. The report says Utah's population is also expected to be older and more racially and ethnically diverse in 2034. Former Park City Mayor Dana Williams, who took office before the 2002 Winter Games, says he believes the state is more prepared for hosting in 2034.
This time, I don't think the outcome or the effects will be as great as they were last time, because we have all the infrastructure in place.
While the 2002 Olympics boosted Park City's brand on the world stage, it also brought unintended consequences.
it's kind of fomented the loss of working and middle class people here, because things were, I mean, we were on a trajectory already in terms of becoming more and more popular, things getting more expensive, but that just shot us into space there in terms of the amount of people coming here and the pricing of things. So,
as Park City prepares to host the world again, the former mayor says preserving the town's charm and sense of character should be a top priority.
Because that's that at this point in time, a lot of that is kind of under siege, and we keep having these ideas around here of creating more and more of a Disney-esque feature to our town, and that needs to be fought.
One thing the Olympics can help with is infrastructure. As part of the 2002 Winter Olympics, several projects around the state received assistance. Those include the construction of Park City's Old Town Transit Center, the widening of Interstate 15, and the installation of the Trax light rail system in the Salt Lake Valley. The Gardner Institute report notes that since 2002, over 100 miles of new light rail track has been installed. The Salt Lake City International Airport has also got a major revamp since the last Winter Games. Utah Governor Spencer Cox and other state and local officials have expressed interest in using the 2034 Olympics to help fund public transit infrastructure. The International Olympic Committee is scheduled to vote to award the 2034 Winter Games around 3:30 a.m. Mountain Time early Wednesday morning. Salt Lake City is widely expected to be named host, as it is not facing any other competing bids. Parker Malatesta, KPCW News.
And as we've reported, Salt Lake did get that bid today from Paris, the IOC awarding the games to Salt Lake City at around 4:20 local time. It's 8:13 now. I'm Connor Thomas filling in for Leslie Thatcher on the KPCW Local News Hour. And now calling in live from Paris, we've got on the line Park City Mayor Nan Worrell. Good afternoon, Mayor Worrell.
Good afternoon.
So first of all, congratulations so much. You're part of the delegation visiting Paris for the 2024 games, and we're, I'm sure, present to see us win the 2034 games. What was your initial reaction?
Oh my gosh, it was so emotional. I'm still emotional talking about it, because it gave such sense of pride in the state of Utah and in our city. We had a phenomenal presentation by the leads on the bid committee, and it was seamless. So it was just a beautiful presentation. It was, the IOC members that were there were extremely impressed by it and voted to award the games to Utah.
What were some of the things that the bid committee told the IOC in this one final push before the vote?
That we're ready. That, you know, we have the venues, that we want to focus on families, and that a couple members of the IOC, as they made comments back to the committee that presented, commented on that, because that's so important to focus on the families. And we had Lindsay Vaughn and Catherine Rainey Norman both spoke about how important it is to have family there when you're competing, and both of them are Olympians, and so they know that well. And so they want to put a real focus on the families, making sure that it's possible for them to be at the games, to support the athletes, and the athletes not have to worry about whether they've got tickets or transportation or whatever they need for their families.
And as we've reported, having 10 years to prepare for the next Winter Games is the most amount of time any host of a Winter Olympics has had to prepare. You say we're ready, and we've got even more time to become even more ready, I guess. What can we do in this next decade to help make this a good games?
And the conversations that I've been having with local partners, as well as with our council, is what do we want to look like in 2035, so that we're making sure that we're building the community that we want, so that when the Olympics are no longer with us, you know, they're here for only a couple of weeks. And so when the games and the Paralympics roll out of town, what do we want to look like? What do we want to see left behind? So as I think you may know, we're going to put a press release out tomorrow announcing that we're going to do a request for proposals jointly with the Park City Chamber, with Summit County, with Park City Mountain in Deer Valley, to come up, hire a firm or maybe even an individual to come up with a 10-year action plan, so that we know and the community knows, mapped out, this is what we want to accomplish in year one, and when we look at when we get to year four, this is what we need to have accomplished and what we need to be working on. So it's an action plan rather than a strategic plan. So it's very specific as to the steps that we need to be taking and looking at all different aspects of the community from, for example, IT infrastructure. What IT infrastructure do we need to have in place for the games and beyond? Or transportation, obviously, is one that comes to mind all of the time.
Yeah, the built environment can be visual, but what do we need as far as IT? We've seen, you know, how it can go pretty wrong with updates, with the news over the weekend of that update crashing a lot of airlines and creating delays and things. What are some of those unseen aspects of the games that we need to make sure are ready to go?
You know, that is a question for somebody that's much smarter than I am. And I had this conversation with our IT director at the city who actually brought the idea up. And as we were, you know, the city needs to be thinking about how do we want to upgrade our, you know, networks and what kind of new fiber do we need to have in town. It needs to be more than just within the city limits. It needs to be, you know, a community-wide effort. And that's why I'm so thrilled that we've got so many partners at the table right now saying, what's our action plan? How are we going to do this together?
And regional partners already have some plans for transportation and infrastructure. Could you update listeners on where we're at with things like busing and other potential ideas that could help, you know, get visitors to and from venues come 34?
I think that we've had a regional transportation convening going on for about the last year and a half that has regional partners from Wasatch County, to Village East and Xtel, as well as Midas and the county. A lot of different partners at the table, both resorts are. And we've been talking about where does it make the most sense to do park and rides? Where does it make most sense to, you know, help people leave their cars and not bring them up into Summit County? So Summit County has just, with some help, a little bit of help from Park City, has completed a park and ride study, and we're going to be seeing the results of that soon.
And, you know, those are our goals locally, and, you know, it might not be on everyone's radar around the world, but have you been able to have conversations with members of the international sporting community about some of our goals locally, and what have they said about whether or not they can help?
You know, we have not, Park City has not directly had those conversations yet.
Gotcha. When it comes to venues, you know, Park City Mountain and Deer Valley will be back in the mix for 2034 with plenty of events. I'd expect they're going to transform their look pretty substantially. You may not have a crystal ball, but what else around town might transform, you know, a la Sundance when Sundance comes to town? What do you expect town to be like 10 years in the future?
In 2002, Main Street was a hub. It was such a fun place of celebration. And that's a community conversation that we need to have. Is that something that we want to do and be again? Because it was loved for, you know, everything from the Clydesdales. I keep hearing about the Clydesdales that came down Main Street as part of the celebration, as well as the fire pits and the pin trading and just the good community feel from people around the world.
It was a party back here in Washington Square as well. However, I mean, the IOC did stress that, you know, it's not all celebratory. They stressed the responsibility of the U.S. specifically in reference to some statements coming out of the DOJ questioning a decision by the World Anti-Doping Agency to allow some Chinese swimmers who tested positive for performance-enhancing drug to still go ahead and compete in the 2021 Tokyo Olympics. Governor Spencer Cox and bid committee chair Fraser Bullock, you know, forcefully saying they'll respect WADA and the IOC's authority come 2034. When it comes to just that subject of like responsibility and your responsibility as a host, where does, you know, Park City Municipal play in, and what kind of things do you see yourself really taking up that mantle of responsibility in the next 10 years?
I think we work very closely with the, you know, the efforts that are going on regionally in Salt Lake City, and, you know, how do we move forward in conjunction with them? How do we present a seamless look to the world?
And I want to ask about Paris as well. What's it been like in the run-up to the games? The summer games kick off in 2 days. What can you tell us about the atmosphere of Paris right now?
It's wonderful. It's very celebratory. There's amazing security. Our Chief Carpenter, as you know, is the president of the International Association of Police Chiefs, and he had recently attended the briefing from Interpol about the security that was going to be here. And there's roads that are closed off. There are officers with weapons, visible weapons, out around, you know, sending the statement that we're going to keep the peace here. It's going to be a peaceful game.
Yeah, I mean, we've heard potentially 10,000 soldiers and 45,000 police officers, not to mention private security in Paris over the next couple of weeks. It sounds, you know, pretty like a pretty big affair. Has Chief Carpenter told you anything about what he's learned in those meetings?
He has not.
What
he just said that there was going to be intense security here.
What do you think you might have to do security wise in town in 2034?
Again, that's a topic for people much more informed than I am on the latest in security. I think that we are extremely fortunate to have Chief Carpenter heading up our security efforts, our police department for the city, and with all of his contacts throughout the International Police Chiefs Association, I have no doubt that we'll have an excellent plan in place.
And then what's next for Utah's delegation in Paris? How much longer are you there, and what else is on your itinerary?
This evening, we're going to have a celebration at USA House. We're going to do a little service project with a youth event that's going on here in Paris at the same time. So we're going to do that in the morning. We'll be having lunch at the Eiffel Tower. We'll be, you know, attending different sporting events that people want to attend. So, you know, it's going to be a great time.
Any other conversations planned with members of the IOC or just other leaders from around the world?
Not that I have. I'm not sure about others in the delegation. You know, I've had a wonderful time here. We have Senate President Adams is here, as well as some members of the legislature. So I've had an opportunity, you know, just have informal conversations with them, which has been wonderful.
Gotcha. Well, Mayor Worrell, anything else you want to mention about the 2034 Games?
Just bring them on. We are so excited to have them, and I hope everyone has a wonderful time at Olympic Park this afternoon. I'm sorry I'm not there to celebrate with you.
All right. We've been speaking with Park City Mayor Nan Worrell. Thank you so much for calling in live from Paris.
Thank you. Bye now.
Bye. And it's 8:24 local time here in Park City. As Mayor Worrell mentioned, there is a celebration this afternoon from 4 to 9 p.m. That's at the Utah Olympic Park. There'll be festivities including live music, vendors, giveaways, pin trading, and an Olympic and Paralympian meet and greet. It's to celebrate the 2034 Olympic Games, which the International Olympic Committee awarded to Salt Lake City and Utah at around 4:20 local time this morning. And Nice, France, awarded the 2030 Winter Games in a dual award. We're going to be reporting on that all morning. It's 8:24 now. You're listening to the Local News Hour from KPCW. I'm Connor Thomas, filling in for Leslie Thatcher on the Local News Hour this morning. And as we've reported, the 2034 Games are coming back to Utah. The IOC made that decision earlier this morning, or earlier in the day in Paris. On the phone with me now, live from Paris, we've got Colin Hilton. He's the president and CEO of the Utah Olympic Legacy Foundation. Colin, I've been saying to Mayor Worrell, good afternoon to you.
And good morning to you, Connor.
Thank you. It's, I think, what, 4:26 p.m. where you are, right?
That is right.
Well, this is big news. Congratulations, first and foremost. You're part of the delegation in Paris right now. What was your initial reaction to the Olympics coming back?
Obviously thrilled. We've been at this for a very long time, as early as 2011 when we started to position to have the state of Utah and Park City, Salt Lake, and all of our host cities, you know, prepared to put in our effort and our bid. And today was the culmination of a lot of hard work by a lot of people, definitely done the Utah way. And for me, very excited because for our staff running our legacy venues of Soldier Hollow and the Olympic Park and the Olympic Oval, this means that our abilities to continue this living legacy that we are enjoying today will be able to continue for many, many generations to come.
And as part of the delegation in Paris right now, what's been your day-to-day? What have you been doing, learning, and seeing in the run-up to the summer games there?
Well, I arrived on Sunday afternoon here in Paris, and obviously, like everyone, maneuvered plane flights to get here. But getting on the ground, acclimating with the time change, and really, we've got well over 100 people as a part of this delegation. So there's a little bit of maneuvering to get people around and to start to show a lot of the folks that have not been around an Olympic Games before sort of what it all takes. So part of our efforts and part of the fun of the next several days is to showcase how the French are putting on what I think will be a terrific Games here, and to start to talk about sort of the applications of how we'll do things slightly different compared to what we did in 02.
And actually, I don't know this. You run the Utah Olympic Legacy Foundation now, but what was your role in 2002? Were you even here in Utah?
So, yes, I was the director of venue operations for all of the Park City Summit County venues. So very intimately involved in the planning with all of the previous leadership that was led by initially Brad Ulch, and then with Dana and Tom Backley and Miles Radiman and the crew back then. So it's like I haven't left. And the last O2 guy still standing. And so been just thrilled to be able to be spearheading the Legacy Foundation for the last 18 years, and quite honored to see that we're going to ramp up over the next 9.5 years to do it all again.
Well, take us through the Legacy Foundation's venues in Utah, and can you talk about which ones will be reused, if not all, and what they'll be used for?
Yeah, all of them will be used. We'll start over in the Heber Valley at Soldier Hollow Nordic Center. That's where all the cross-country and biathlon competitions will be. Over at the Olympic Park, we had two fields of play in 02. We will have actually three fields of play between the ski jumps, the sliding track, and our new Eccles Olympic Mountain Center for some ski and snowboard events. So we will be very, very busy. We were the busiest venue in 02, and we will be that way again. Then the third venue we look after is the Utah Olympic Oval down in Kearns in Salt Lake Valley. That is where speed skating will be. So we are have wonderful teams. We put on regular international events every winter. And for me, this is just a continuation and an ability to once again welcome the world as we do so well here in Utah, and to put on not only a spectacular Games, but as some of the discussion has already been in the community, an ability to have this date in the future be a catalyst for some really important initiatives and projects that the communities around the Wasatch Back and Wasatch Front have as priorities.
Yeah, and I do know that under construction at the UOP, if it's not done already, there's a new run being built for ski mountaineering, which is set to make its Olympic debut in Italy in a couple years. Do you know yet what the rules around those venues are, and if you'll be able to use SkiMo that run in 2034 if that is maintained in the Olympics?
So a little too early to finalize all the disciplines being this far out. We will get to that level of planning as the years pass along. But at the moment, that is sort of a new sport that'll be happening in Milan Cortina. And as long as there's enough countries and interest in the sport, that will likely continue on to 2030. And we'll see what happens after that. There are obviously always in this lengthy period building up to 2034, new sports that we don't even know that might be a part of the Games. And so as we have, we'll work with the national and international federations to determine what new sports are in and maybe some that will not be in.
Yeah, I mean, maybe you'll catch Olympic breakdancing while you're in Paris. I mean, 30...
that one I don't think is going to continue on after Paris.
Interesting. Well, 30,000-foot view, I mean, we're talking about maintaining venues for like 3 decades since they were last used in an Olympics. Not that they're, left fallow that whole time, but what does it mean to like keep a facility running, and what kind of work is needed to get them back in Olympic shape?
Well, that's one of the real proud things I think listeners should understand about Utah's approach. We essentially came up with the pillar of legacy in our post-2002 efforts. We planned for not just putting on a 3-week sporting event, but also to have a plan as to what we do with these facilities afterward. And we had a legacy fund at $76 million as surplus from a games that, you know, most people don't ever think about a games being break even or even profitable. We were that way in 02, and we will again in 2034. And part of the budget is actually to re-endow the legacy fund of the Utah Olympic Legacy Foundation, and it will be absolutely needed. And because we subsidize and we operate these facilities in a way that keeps the cost down and encourages participation rates.
Yeah, could you say more about your financial situation right now and about how much money you need to break even at this point and what having the Olympics returning could mean?
Very simply put, our legacy fund has shrunk from $76 million down to $46 million today. If we didn't have another games coming, we would be eroding that even at a faster pace. With the announcement of a games, this will bring some new sources of income for us, some renewal of interest in all of the winter sports that we support, and a community building up excitement that will support our efforts. So we will slow the decline on eating into the principal of our legacy fund and get a real boost as we get closer to 2034. So we are right now not in a long-term financial sustainable model, but we will be as a result of these games being awarded.
Are those additional sources of income state, federal, international, and how soon could you start to see them?
It really will play out, and it will be multiple sources. We have been, over the last 6 years, been receiving funds from the state of Utah to help us with the upkeep of the facilities. And that was purposeful by the state and done not because we were looking to host the games, but done to support what we do and training athletes at these winter sport venues, and using them as also community recreation centers where they're so busy. You know, we're about 4 times busier in their use of these facilities today than right after 02, that everybody has a connection. I think many listeners here who might be going up to the great event that we're going to have tonight at the Olympic Park, have had a child in a program, or they themselves have learned to do a backflip in the pool, or have friends in town and come up to do our summer activities or winter bobsled rides or tubing over at Soldier Hollow or major events that we do all through the summer, mountain biking at Soldier Hollow. And so we've figured out to look at these venues as not just elite athlete training facilities, but are a much more well-rounded use. That's very important, but it's only a sliver of the day. And we invite guests in from out of town to be inspired by freestyle aerial shows, which will again be highlighted tonight, and also to have our youth, especially in our community, be able to enjoy the programs and learn winter sport and to develop life skills through sport, which is a hallmark of our foundation and our partner organizations like the Youth Sport Alliance, our national governing bodies. You know, we are a team Utah, And it's been that way for 20 years and will continue this for generations to come.
And if I remember correctly, I think the 2002 Winter Olympics here were at the time the Winter Games or the Games with some of the best return on investment up until that point. Is the delegation in Paris talking about making that kind of success happen again?
Absolutely. And I think it won't surprise many of the listeners here. Our games in 02 were very much about showcasing Utah to the world. And it was a bit of a real reinforcement to people in Utah. Wow, we put the games on. We were able to host the world. And it really gave us some wonderful confidence that we enjoyed as we post games to really hone in on how we operate. A future games, we know we'll put on a great competition, and that at its core is the key goal of hosting an Olympic and Paralympic Games. But we also view that the games coming up, we've had a lot of growth, and we have had a lot of growth challenges. And with our community partners, our local governments, we view the games will be able to help address some of these growth challenges that we are facing, whether it's traffic and congestion at Kimball Junction or a redevelopment project of Heber City or air quality and environmental sustainability goals. The games will be a tool that allow us to solve some of these community initiatives and goals that we have. And I am most thrilled to be working on that. And that's why having a 9.5-year run up to a future games is actually really valuable for the state and for local regions.
And we've talked about some of the goals you've had, just, you know, beefing up stuff around the Utah Olympic Park, that new mountain center, additions to the bobsled track, the Skimo run. What other improvements have you been looking at Soldier Hollow and the ice rink venues?
Well, at Soldier Hollow, we're just finishing a $14 million renovation of the competition management building. We actually expanded it by four times the size of the original event building, which is right at the finish areas of all of our races and summer events. That, again, sort of the Utah way is we've been renovating, replacing, improving all of the things that have been coming up to the end of their life at these facilities because they've been actively used. We've been maintaining and doing that. The end result of this approach is we don't have to put our hand out and ask for monies to build new facilities or to have the government put any local or state tax dollars into constructing elements and infrastructure for the purpose of hosting a future games. We don't need to. All of our venues are within 1 hour drive of an athlete village and the awesome international airport that we have. There is no setup like this in the world. And I think through all of our recent interactions with the IOC, they've seen that, they see our passion. They say we have wonderful venues, but they also said, what is more important is what we see with your people. Your people are passionate. They have a volunteer spirit like no place else in the world. And we feel their love of Olympism and what that means at a grassroots level. And they're so proud. And I think today, I think the vote was 86-4 and 3 against and 6 abstain. So, you know, even though there wasn't other competition, that was a statement of support. And some of the key IOC staff that I know well afterwards said, Colin, I don't think we'll ever see as prepared and such a good bid as yours was today. And so I think there's a bunch of us that are very proud about that. And we're very proud and thankful to the community of Park City and Summit County for supporting our efforts all these years.
Definitely. And I want to like step back a little bit and ask you more about the Paris experience. Have you been able to look at venues there, and have you learned anything that you can take back to the venues that you run?
Well, since we're just starting up some of the soccer competitions today, there hasn't been any events yet. I haven't been to the venues that will happen over the next week or so. A few of us, my colleague Callum Clark and I, will be staying a little bit longer than the delegation here to really do what's called the Observer Program. We're going to be meeting with our counterparts on the French 2024 organizing committee and get behind the scenes and sort of reacquaint and see what and how they're operating and take some of those ideas and bring them back to Utah.
All right. Colin, do you have anything else you want to mention?
Just a shout out to my staff at the Olympic Park today. Proud of you guys. Thanks for hosting the big party there. Wish I was there as well, but I know it'll be a great event. And thanks again to the whole community for supporting our efforts over these years. I guarantee you we're going to have a lot of fun the next 10 years.
All right. We've been speaking with the president and CEO of the Utah Olympics Olympic Legacy Foundation, Colin Hilton, live from Paris. Thank you so much, Colin.
Thank you, Connor. Have a good day.
Congrats. Bye. All right. And as he mentioned, there is that celebration at Utah Olympic Park in the Park City area later today. That's 4 to 9 p.m. It's free live music, vendors, giveaways, pin trading, and an Olympic and Paralympian meet and greet. There's a Flying Ace All-Stars freestyle show. That is free at 6:30 p.m., although tickets have been all reserved at this point. There is no parking available on site. However, ride shares and hotel shuttles will drop riders at the Skull Candy Building. Buses are running from 3 p.m. to 10 p.m., and a free bike valet is available. It's all happening from 4 to 9 p.m. at the Utah Olympic Park to celebrate the 2034 Winter Olympic Games returning to Utah. It's 8:44. I'm Connor Thomas, filling in for Leslie Thatcher on the Local News Hour this morning. We'll interrupt our Olympic-related programming for a bit of local news right now. Hideout residents spoke up Monday to protest the results of their infrastructure district's first-ever election. KPCW's Grace Dorfler has this report.
In a tense meeting Monday afternoon, Hideout Local District Number 1 swore in three trustees, a district manager, a treasurer, and a clerk. The district manages infrastructure for about 800 land parcels in the Young Town east of the Jordanelle Reservoir. The oaths of office came a few weeks after the district held its first election for the Board of Trustees after failing to do so for 14 years. In this election, votes were weighted based on the amount of land owned. Individual residence ballots counted less than those of developers who own numerous parcels. All three incumbent trustees, Thomas Baxter, Dean Hevren, and Will Pratt, were reelected by an overwhelming margin. All have ties to Mustang Development, the original developer of the town of Hideout. According to a list of properties shared with KPCW, as of April 2024, Mustang and its subsidiaries owned almost 60% of the square footage in the district. The attorney representing the district, Brad Christofferson, said Monday's public meeting was an effort to come into compliance with state requirements. It was not to address public concerns.
We do recognize there's been emailed concerns and challenges to candidacies. Those are not going to be addressed in today's meeting. An email is not the legal way to challenge a candidacy, so we will not be addressing those. We will be swearing in the prevailing candidates today, and if those of you that are not happy with the outcome of the election, you'll have to seek your own legal counsel.
He told the room if anyone had come to the meeting to debate the trustees' legitimacy, then, quote, I invite you to leave because we're not going to respond to it. One Hideout resident spoke up to ask the correct way to challenge a candidacy.
What is the process?
I am not going to give you legal advice.
Despite Christofferson's warning, numerous residents spoke up during public comment to voice their concerns about the election process.
We have been taxed by an entity that is opaque.
That's Jeff Schiff, a full-time resident of Hideout. He says he decided to run for the local district's Board of Trustees when he learned about the election by mail. He got concerned when he couldn't find any information about what the district did, the state of its finances, or when it met. He told the trustees if residents' concerns were not adequately addressed during the meeting, they would contact the Lieutenant Governor's office and the Wasatch County Council. Fellow candidate Ed O'Rourke asked questions during his public comment about the election process.
Who at the Lieutenant Governor's office was a party to this accelerated recruitment of candidates under a 7-day window and then an accelerated balloting process that clearly did not reach all the members in the neighborhood that it should have? So I'm asking you once again, please don't ratify this slate of candidates today.
O'Rourke, Schiff, and four other candidates ran against the three incumbent trustees. Despite residents' concerns, including that some residents didn't get ballots until after the voting deadline, all three candidates were sworn in. The local district also conducted regular business like reviewing a summary of finances and setting a regular quarterly meeting schedule for the future. KPCW has reached out to the Lieutenant Governor's office for more information about the election and will share that information as soon as it's available. KPCW has also contacted the three incumbent trustees and will update the story if they respond. Grace Dorfler, KPCW News.
You're listening to KPCW's Local News Hour on this July 24th. Happy Pioneer Day. There are some celebrations of note in Wallsburg and Charleston, especially in the Wasatch Back. For those of you headed into Salt Lake City today, the Pioneer Day Parade kicks off in about 10 minutes or so at 9 a.m. There are some road closures to be aware of. The far right lane on South Temple from 2nd East to 13th East is going to close. It's already closed from 5 a.m. to 11:30 this morning. Then 2nd East from South Temple to 9th South is going to completely close. Salt Lake City Police Department did not give an estimate for when that would reopen. Then 9th South from 2nd East to 8th East is going to close completely. No time frame on that, but just expect plenty of delays while traffic's rerouted around the parade route. It is a big day, additionally, with the announcement of the 2034 Games returning to Utah. Back with more local news after this. Well, the Demolition Derby will combine metallic mayhem with old-fashioned tomfoolery at the Wasatch County Fairgrounds July 26th and 27th this week. KPCW's Amber Johnson has more.
Rihanna may sing about finding love in a hopeless place, but Wasatch County Parks and Recreation's marketing coordinator Jen Bowman is living it. When she moved to the Heber Valley 10 years ago, she said everyone told her she had to attend the Wasatch County Fair's Demolition Derby.
And then I'm taking pictures of the derby, and I'm like, who is this crazy driver out here? Like, he's crashing and hitting so hard. He's an animal. And we were just watching in such awe at how hard this car was hitting. Fast forward 3 years, I bought a puppy from Brad Bowman, and here we are.
Her hard-hitting hubby Brad said the Heber Valley hosts one of the best derbies in the nation, thanks to the high level of competitors and the hospitality of the hosts.
I always tell people it's kind of like modern-day gladiators. You take your car and you build it into, you know, a war weapon, basically. Go out in the arena and you run into each other and you go till the last person is running.
Brad co-owns the company Destructive Behavior with Ryan Simpson. They are contracted with the county to produce the derby through 2026. They try to ensure drivers of every budget and skill set can participate. In addition to the experts in the weld class, this competition of chaos features powder puff, stock, and youth divisions. There's even a Power Wheels showdown for kids. The total purse in the weld division is $65,000. First place will take home a $15,000 prize. It would be easy to dismiss the derby as barbaric bedlam, but there's a method to the madness. Safety requirements like roll cages, helmets, and seatbelts mean very few major injuries. Brad's strategy is to keep moving.
So my goal is always to like hit and try to drive through the people, or as soon as I hit, grab reverse and back out of the hit, or vice versa, hit drive. The other strategy is I try to drive with my driver's door in towards the arena, because you're not allowed to hit the driver's door.
Brad says many are surprised to learn the time and money spent on his obsession. He estimates 300 man hours and $30,000 on a car he took to a derby in Rapid City, South Dakota.
So, like, I always wanted to do it. So when I was 15 years old, I bought my first car and built it and crashed it. And I've been hooked ever since.
That's not always the answer you get. I built my first car and built it and crashed it.
Right.
Yeah. I'd have to do the math, but I've probably built 100-plus demolition derby cars now and driven in probably close to 200 demolition derbies.
And all that twisted metal is proof of a smashing good time. This is Amber Johnson, KPCW News.
And the Camas Food Pantry opened up its first permanent location in over 2 years after operating out of South Summit Elementary School. That opened yesterday. In a meeting earlier this year, Camas City Mayor Matt McCormick noted the need for a food pantry keeps growing, and the new location will help ease that need. It's at 4th South near the DMV. And Park City Trails and Open Space Department has opened the first of two new trailheads planned at the Farm and McLeod Creek Trails. The Quarry Mountain Trailhead opened Tuesday and is located along Meadows Drive on the east side of State Route 224. It features 11 parking spaces, including an ADA stall, a map kiosk, and a dog waste station. The second trailhead will be built south of Meadows Drive, adjacent to the Farm Trail. That's on the west side of 224 with 19 parking spaces. Under the city's plan, the trailheads will be separated from the roadway, which could allow users to pull in and back out away from active traffic. You're listening to KPCW's Local News Hour. It's 8:54. Well, it's the big news of the day. The International Olympic Committee has voted to send the Winter Games back to Salt Lake City in 2034. Here's KPCW's Parker Malatesta with everything you need to know.
In an 83-6 vote, the IOC gave the final approval to Utah's bid for the Games during a vote in Paris around 4:20 a.m. Mountain Time Wednesday. The news drew wild cheering and applause from a huge crowd gathered for an overnight watch party at Washington Square in downtown Salt Lake City. Salt Lake City was widely expected to be named host as it was not facing any other competing bids. Utah organizers have nearly a decade to prepare for the Olympics, which is a record length of time for the Winter Games. Despite the award, IOC officials warned Salt Lake City's bid could be revoked if U.S. authorities don't respect the jurisdiction of the World Anti-Doping Agency, or WADA. The concerns follow criticism from the United States Anti-Doping Agency regarding 23 Chinese swimmers who tested positive for a banned substance ahead of the 2021 Tokyo Games. IOC President Thomas Bach apologized about the issue arising and said it has nothing to do with the Salt Lake City bid. Prior to the IOC's vote, a 7-member presentation team, including former ski racer Lindsey Vonn and Utah Governor Spencer Cox, made a final pitch to IOC members. Bid President and CEO Fraser Bullock drew tears during his last speech.
Our dream is that it can help bring unity, hope, and inspiration to a world in need of them. The Games have the power to lift and change the heart and souls of each of us. And most importantly, how we see each other and treat each other for good. The Games are a platform unlike any other in the world. If we learned anything from hosting in 2002, it is that hosting the Games is a privilege.
Salt Lake City now joins Lake Placid, New York, Innsbruck, Austria, and St. Moritz, Switzerland as the only cities to host the Winter Olympics twice. The 2034 Olympics will be the fifth time the United States hosts a Winter Games. The U.S. is also slated to host the Summer Games in Los Angeles in 2028. IOC officials toured venues in Salt Lake City and Park City in April in preparation for the vote. A major selling point of Salt Lake City's bid is its ability to use existing venues, as no permanent construction is required to put on the Winter Games. All sporting venues are within a one-hour drive from the Athlete Village at the University of Utah. The bid team is also promising to deliver the first-ever Athlete's Family Village. Vonn, a gold medalist and Park City resident, said bringing family along to the Olympics isn't easy.
I experienced challenges obtaining tickets, accommodations, and transportation for them. It would have been so helpful to be able to focus exclusively on competing, knowing that my family had been taken care of and could be there with me, especially at those pivotal moments during my career.
The 2034 Olympics will be privately funded and is expected to cost nearly $3 billion. The Wasatch BAC will host a significant portion of events during the Games. Park City Mountain will host freestyle skiing and snowboarding events. Moguls and aerials competitions will be at Deer Valley Resort. Utah Olympic Park will host bobsled and ski jumping. Cross-country skiing competitions will be held at Soldier Hollow Nordic Center. Rice-Eccles Stadium will again host the opening and closing ceremonies. Snow Basin will host all alpine skiing events, which is a change from the 2002 Olympics. A new addition in 2034 will be the Big Air competition at the Block 85 venue in downtown Salt Lake City. Officials say the site plan is subject to change over the next 10 years. On Wednesday, the IOC also awarded the 2030 Winter Games to the French Alps. Park City will host a celebration of the Games' return later Wednesday at Utah Olympic Park from 4 to 9 p.m. Parker Malatesta, KPCW News.
It's 8:59. I'm Connor Thomas, filling in for Leslie on the local news hour. And as a heads up, nearly 500 youth soccer teams will convene across the Wasatch back this weekend for one of the largest youth soccer tournaments in Utah, the Park City Extreme Cup. It's run by the Park City Soccer Club, and Executive Director Shelley Gilwald says more than 30,000 people will be in attendance this year. The almost 500 teams will bring about 9,000 players and coaching staff. An additional 25,000 spectators are expected as well. That's equivalent to the event's pre-pandemic numbers. The Extreme Cup is marking its 21st year this July. That would be 22 if not for 2020 and the COVID-19 pandemic. It's a three-day tournament with 864 games spread across Park City, Heber, Oakley, and Francis. Gilwald says nearly all the teams are from within the state, a majority from the Wasatch Front. 17% are from the Wasatch Back, and 20% are from St. George Logan or out of state. The thousands of players, coaches, and supporters are expected to give the area lodging industry a boost.
About 54% of those say that they stay at least one night. We market the tournament as a staycation, an opportunity to get out of the heat in the valley.
The Park City Extreme Cup runs tomorrow through Saturday. We'll have more on transportation and logistics tomorrow on the local news hour. You've been listening to KPCW Park City, and national news from NPR is next.